Listen, this was a trade of two players on two teams who wanted to go in the other direction. Russell Westbrook wanted to be in Washington, reunited with Scottie Brooks, play with Brad Beal. And John Wall wanted to play with James Harden, wanted to go to Houston.
What we're focused on is trying to get through the 2021 season so that we can be back in position for 21-22 to normalcy. And if the players owe us more money than anybody imagined, the salary cap could well be flat or close to flat for the next 5 or 6 years, and players into the future will be repaying what we're owed.
That first voice you heard was Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN on the Westbrook Wall trade, and then the familiar dulcet tones of one Gary Bettman. The league's doing it for you and all the players out there, Ziggy.
There's no negotiation, so it's a take it or leave it then. It's an XYZ, but he said it wasn't an XYZ, so I don't know. I'm confused now. Is this a negotiation or not?
Maybe it's an ABC, not an XYZ.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the players can't expect whatever deal they signed in July to keep the same one. And I know that's a tough pill to swallow for the union, but this is just a different time, and I hope the players can see that. I'm going to stand on my ground where, okay, why not keep the CBA the way it was and the way it was changed to in July and just prorate it? If it's 48 games, okay, I'm getting 48 games of however many days they decide to play. That's what they're going to get this year. So I think that would solve a lot. I don't think a majority of players would be up for that, but, you know, $300 million, it's... I don't know. It's a 50-50 split. Like, I see the league side of this. Everything's 50-50. If the league doesn't make it, the players don't get it. That's where...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was just 50-50. And if you give back more now, you're not going to have to give as much back later. You know, Bettman, I don't know if he's making threats. They've crunched the numbers on this stuff. They've done the worst case scenario calculations. It could be a flat cap for 5 or 6 years. So you're telling the players a couple of things. Number one, you got guys coming up in free agency over the next number of years. If the cap is flat over the next 5 or 6 years, Ziggy, that will include the free agencies of all of the Leafs' young kids. Right? Now, Auston Matthews is going to get paid. All that. I'm not suggesting that he's going to take $3 or $4 million a year less because the cap is flat in 4 years. But I'm giving you a sense of just how far out Gary Bettman is projecting. So whether he is being 100% real with this or if he's just sort of executing it as a verbal threat, he's saying, look, if the cap is flat for the next 5 or 6 years, that is going to mitigate salaries for a certain bracket of players, probably the majority of the league, right? Mm-hmm. And if you guys give a little more back now, maybe there will be a little less pain later.
Yeah,
that's the message.
And the league doesn't just, they don't want to be in the hole too much, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you guys, you know, our whole system is going to have to change now going forward. Like, they don't want to pay the players out and then have to try to recoup 30% of this revenue that the players got paid. I understand that side of it.
And how would you feel as a player cutting a check?
No, it's going to be awful. I mean, the biggest point that I think people make is, okay, all these owners are billionaires. Why can't they just keep things the way they are for a couple years? You're going to take a hit for a year or two, and then things will be back to normal. Why can't you just wait for that money to come in? Why do you need it now? And that's tough. That's tough for a lot of fans, right? P- people that pay their hard-earned money to come and watch. They, you know, watch games on TV, or when they were going to games, buying, you know, buying gear, buying jerseys. I just, it's tough, right? A lot of people have spent a lot of money on this sport, and it's when you see the players and owners trying to fight in, you know, to come back, sign the CBA in July of this year, and then right now with, you know, trying to redo it, it's tough to watch. It's tough to hear, right? And now it's over $300 million. So it's this point you brought up yesterday.
Oh, $10 million a team, or yeah, a little less.
That's what a fan's going to say. Of course. What, we're not going to play? So now we're not starting January because less than $10 million a team, each organization can't pony up for the year? Like, it's just, it's tough to read that stuff. So I sympathize with the fans because they don't want to deal with it. And all the people saying that no other league deals with this, like, every league deals with this. Like, let's not just say this is the NHL. I mean, I would love to look up what leagues have had the season delayed, or, you know, they've had the strikes or postponements, whatever you want to say. Does the NHL lead in that? Maybe. I don't know. I have to look up every other league to see what they've done with their CBA negotiations. But this kind of stuff happens everywhere.
Yeah, I mean the NFL contained its last potential work stoppage to an off season. I think we're going back to about 2011. The NBA's had the odd lockout. This is a different situation. It's influenced by COVID-19. And Ziggy, we only got to go back a handful of months. Players and the league were at each other's throats, almost quite literally, in baseball before they figured out that 60-game season. So I don't know. We spend so much time appropriately dealing with the on-ice, on-court, on-field products, and then we spend, it feels, just as much time talking about the business side of all the sports that we cover. And let's just hope, as we move through the first week of December here, that cooler heads will prevail and hockey will be back early in the new year. We trust that it will. Every time I yay or nay you, even if the season doesn't start till February 1st, you're still yaying a season. And that gives me great, great hope.
Yeah, I think they're going to play. But did you find it interesting in the interview Gary Bettman did yesterday?
I find almost none of this interesting. I just want hockey back.
No, just something interesting. And he said, well, I'm trying to look for clues here. You know, I'm trying to find my,
what did you know, he I say? Gotta,
What did I talk about yesterday a lot? I was like, I don't know why the league just doesn't go to, if they don't want the season to start, just go to, okay, health reasons. What are the players going to say? And so Gary Bettman says, we talked to some pretty highly placed people without name dropping. COVID is going through a second wave, which could be worse than the first wave.
Which could be.
And between Thanksgiving and the aftermath, we are taking our time and making sure, as we look for ways to move forward, we're focused on health and safety and doing the right things. I'm telling you, that's the door creaking.
We're focused on appropriate legalese.
Yeah,
He's a smart man.
Yeah, just go to, okay, you don't want to do this, so now it's a health issue for everyone.
Well, we'll see. You notice, because you always accuse me of this, by the way, you notice that I didn't start the show. You got one more hockey thing, because I was going to move.
Oh, you're moving? Okay, last one. We are hopeful and optimistic based on everything we are hearing that we can get back to normalcy in 2021-22. So he's planting the seeds. Yeah, we might need to take the year off, guys. So I don't know. It's negotiating. He's saying it's not negotiating, it's negotiating. Like, come on. So
yeah, man, it's all a public.
Yeah, I think half of it is. I mean, when he comes and does an interview, there's a reason.
And this is the way Ziggy, that he's speaking to a good portion of the players. Not a ton of players
is the way to send the message. And the thing is, even if you're a player and you don't want to watch this, like, say you're a player, you don't like the commissioner, whoever it is, he's speaking to those players. And on a lot of leagues, there's a lot of players that no matter how good a commissioner is, they're not going to like them, right?
No.
So yeah, this is the way to get your message across. So I don't think the league does any interviews without any purpose. If there's no purpose to it, I don't think they do them. So he's getting his message through.
You'll notice, and I want you to take notes on this, that I did not start the show by talking about the final score of yesterday's football game. Right? Because you always point out how I ignore when a Ziggy Lock locks and how I lead with it when a Ziggy Lock doesn't work out.
Well, it's 6:10, so I don't think you exactly waited the whole show.
Well,
you waited 10 minutes.
I don't know. They got something here. All right. Ziggy Lock, almost forgot this because we never have football from the NFL on a Wednesday. Pittsburgh favored by 10.5 at home.
10.5.
This afternoon over your hashtag Ravens flock.
So Lamar Jackson's not in. We got RG3 going in. He's only taken, what, a little over a dozen snaps. Steelers defense is, I mean, one of the best in the league. Big Ben, I don't know. 10.5 is a huge number. I'm going to have to go Steelers and go against my Ravens.
Bam.
70-yard touchdown.
Because the corner tried to jump the root. He tried to jump the ball.
Tried to jump the root. And who's behind him? The safety?
But I mean, it was kind of a man coverage. So once you
I don't even know what player that. But yeah, but the secondary was awful. Like,
but once you try to jump the ball and pick that pass, if you don't at least bat it down, you got a problem on a pass down the sideline like that. Trace McSorley to Marquise Brown. And Baltimore gets the cover relatively late in the football game. Had a chance to win, too. They couldn't get a stop on defense.
Come on. It was the only play they made all game. The defense has played well. Like, it was a defensive game. Ben was terrible. I'm sorry. The interception he threw when they were in the red zone, that was... Big Ben hasn't done that in 11 games this year. He hasn't done that once. As soon as I pick Pittsburgh, that's what happens. Man, these teams, they don't cover when I pick them. I'm telling you, Pittsburgh.
It's almost as if the Bears.
Oh, boy, you.
The Bears.
These teams don't cover when I pick them. It's almost as if.
They win. They just don't cover. It's like, maybe I should just go money line from. You want me? Maybe I'll do money line from now. I mean,
I'm more it's not ATS. As much fun. It's more fun if it's a.
I know it's way more fun for you. You love these back.
I just I give you. I mean, it took balls to take. If you're taking a team favored by double digits, it takes balls.
It takes some, but I don't see a big difference between this and the Monday nighter, the Eagles game. It's the same thing. It's a backdoor cover. It didn't happen in the same way with time expiring, but I'm sorry. This, like a 70-yarder, I don't know.
I don't know.
Steelers defense, three players making mistakes. Three.
Ziggy, I think maybe you're going to have to do a deeper dive into the gambling laws in the state of Pennsylvania between Doug Peterson and the Eagles the other night and the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday trying to jump a route.
But that offense,
I don't know.
The Ravens haven't have a reason to have a bad offense. They don't have their running backs, they don't have their quarterback. Like, they have so many major pieces missing.
You know who you sound like? You know who you sound like right now?
A Ravens flock fan.
Well, partly, yes, but you know who else you sound like? You sound like me. Talking about the 49ers for most of this season. And if I reacted to you the way that you reacted to me, oh, yeah, injuries. Why? Injuries are excuse. Blah, 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 blah. Got to go out there and play, man. Got to go out there and play. RG3, he did something to his hammy.
Oh,
late in the first half. And
can they not put a better tensor bandage around that? That looks like me when I was playing Pee Wee hockey in the MTHL in Toronto for the Wexford Raiders at Tid Reeve Arena when like one of the fathers wrapped ice bag on one of us. Can they not put a better tensor bandage on that leg? Did you see that thing? Like, here's the the first thing I thought was, okay, who did that? Like, is it social distancing where the medical staff can't get near anyone? Okay, I get that. So that's the first thing I think of. Then I'm thinking, okay, maybe RG3 wants everybody to see that it's a massive ice bag on his hammy and he's really sore. Okay, fine. I just, that looked like an amateur job. I think whoever the medical trainer is should be embarrassed for that.
He was out there. I texted the group chat. I'm like, why is RG3 still playing?
Yeah, but how good quarter? Was... good was the quarterback sneak or whatever you want to call that right. move? Like, it's money.
But Ziggy, he was into a 3 or a 5 step drop every now and then. He could look like he could hardly put any weight on his left leg.
Well, he probably wasn't expecting to run that much and play that much.
Well,
it's hard when you're on the side. I'm telling you, and you have to come in and you haven't played in a while and you don't take snaps.
Had a hammy issue. Is my point? Like, look like he should have been out there. I wasn't necessarily questioning.
Well,
all things being equal, it should have been.
Was it sore before the game? Like, is this an injury he's been battling?
He ran the ball out of bounds inside the final 2 minutes or so of the first half. That's the first time I noticed it. He didn't look well. Like, he caught a cleat or something on his way out of bounds, trying to stop the clock, and then the next thing you know, he was hobbling off and on the rest of the way. And then Trace McSorley comes in and throws that touchdown pass to Brown.
I
think the broader point is, aside from your lack of success on the Ziggy Locks, is that you got a football team now that is legitimately out of a playoff spot. Like, they're 6-5, and the three wildcard teams in the AFC right now are Cleveland, Miami, and Indianapolis. The Browns are a 3-loss team through 11 games. Indy and Miami have 4 losses. Like, Baltimore is very much on the outside looking in at this point. They've still got the Browns on their schedule. I think they're done with the Steelers, but they've still got a game in Cleveland. Like, it's getting down to crunch time here. Lamar's got COVID, so he's going to have to work through whatever side effects of that. You know, we thought it affected Cam Newton for longer than just the period of time that he was on the sidelines, that he was out with it. This is a season gone sideways for the Baltimore Ravens.
Nightmare.
There's five, Ziggy, there are 5 games left. One of them is against Cleveland, but there are 5 games left, and the Browns have 2 in the loss column on Baltimore right now in the AFC North. There's other ways to get in. You can get 2 wildcard teams can make it from the same division, but in terms of finishing top two, it doesn't look good.
Well, they almost have to, they're going to rely on the other teams losing, right? They need help at this point. They need help. I mean, they have the Cowboys, the Browns, the Jags, they've got the Giants, and they got the Bengals.
Okay, so they should win all of those games, except for maybe Cleveland on the road. But even then, if you want to consider yourself a playoff team, you need to get the job done there.
Yeah. So what does that get them to? That gets them to if they win outright, they're at 6 wins right now, right? So they have
the Ravens are 6-5.
Yeah, so they'll finish 11-5. Is that
they
enough?
They should. It could be 10-6. Don't discount the Browns at home.
I'm not discounting. I'm saying if they win outright,
yes, they'd be 11-5.
It's 11-5, and they probably get in. Yeah, it's going to come down to the game against the Brownies. The good old Brownies. Yeah, and they're better than we've talked a lot about Cleveland. I think it's, I feel like their fan base, they're one of those fan bases that stretches. Cowboys and Brown. I feel like they stretch into Canada. They're the two teams.
If you talk to my parents' generation, mm-hmm. back in the day, you got in the Southern Ontario market, back when there were like 2 or 3 TV stations in the world. I'm talking like 50s, 60s, whatever. You'd either get Cleveland Browns games or New York Giants games. So older school fans, there are allegiances to both the Browns and the Giants because those are the teams that appeared on TV at the time. So you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas has a continental fan base, if you will. Green Bay certainly has
Yeah, Green Bay, throw that in the mix too. I think just my circle of friends, it's like Cowboys, Browns,
the Patriots. The Patriots do. I think you also got to look at all the dynasties, Zig, right? Like the success of the 49ers in the 80s, that created a broader fan base for them because everybody remembers Montana and then right into Young. Like they were a really good team for 15 years. I grew up in that, right? So I became a fan. Like I said, the Patriots, there are people who are 30 years old who are seeing what it's like to have an NFL with a mediocre at best New England Patriots team in a given season. We grew up in the 80s. We remember the red home jerseys and the bad, bad Patriots teams.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, that's never existed.
Well, it will come down to that game in 2 weeks. They play in 2 weeks, so.
And they got to get that game in against Dallas.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's going to happen Tuesday now.
Right. So Pittsburgh was supposed to happen last Thursday, a week ago today. The game against Dallas was supposed to be tonight. And then they were supposed to have 10 days off and visit Cleveland a week from Sunday. But instead, it's now.
They pushed it to Monday.
Monday. So there you have it. How about this Woj bomb that dropped yesterday, Adrian Wojnarowski? So Russell Westbrook is on his way to Washington for John Wall. My question is for anybody, it's a bit of a saw-off, right? Two guys on a Supermax contract, so money in, money out. The Wizards got 73 games, including 0 games out of John Wall last year, 73 games of the last 3 years. How are the Washington Wizards? I get it. Russell Westbrook is a unique figure, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, but how are the Washington Wizards a worse team today than they were yesterday? They didn't have John Wall on the floor last year. Bradley Beal took over as that team's best player, and now the Wizards are going to push ahead, trying to change the culture of that locker room, bringing in Russ. You can say whatever you want about Russell Westbrook. You do not question that man's work ethic. You can sometimes question the on-the-court motives, but you do not question that man's work ethic. The Wizards move forward here in a tough Eastern Conference, and they're going to count on Russ teaming up with Bradley Beal to try to sneak him into the playoffs.
Well, it's going to be his third team in 3 years, right, starting. And that hasn't happened many times. Like for former MVPs, this is going to be his third season on three different teams, right?
Yeah. OKC 2 years ago, Houston last year, Washington this year.
And so former MVPs, there's only been three other players that have done that, three or more different teams to start the season in consecutive years. One is Shaq, one is Derrick Rose, and one is Moses Malone.
That is a
Derrick Rose. Yeah. I had a friend message me this. Derrick Rose apparently did it with five different teams, five times. I was like, that can't be
did
real.
What five different times?
Like five started the season, five different teams.
Oh, five teams, 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like crazy when you think of that.
He also couldn't stay healthy once it.
Yeah, I mean, he was injured and stuff like that. But I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting for former MVPs to move around that much, right? How many MVP players in different leagues move around?
Well,
this
I mean, it's just proof that the Houston experiment didn't work, right? Mm-hmm. This is partly the result of Russell Westbrook being as clear as James Harden about saying, "I want out of Houston." The Rockets part with him. They take on John Wall's money. They count on the fact that Wall will be healthy. I mean, he's missed the last season plus with the torn Achilles. They roll him into the lineup, and maybe he's a really nice compliment for James Harden if Harden is still there.
Yeah.
You know, well, Harden you still wants out. I don't imagine that James Harden, he's gonna play for the Rockets if he's not traded, but I can't imagine that he's thrilled about all this.
Yeah. Well, Westbrook did say he's like, well, why do you want out of Houston? He said it's a casual culture. That's what he's been quoted as saying. He's like, it's way too casual there.
Right. And Washington had that too. And they're looking to, for Russ to come in and change it up
a little bit. I figured a guy like Westbrook would change that. Like when I talk about the Leafs and I say, well, they need like a Westbrook to mix it up. I thought Westbrook would have done that.
Okay, but maybe he could have done it over the longer haul. But, you know, you come in, you're the new guy.
I wonder, like,
at least another superstar, you can't take over a room like that.
It's hard. I know. When you have another superstar in the room, somebody as big as you, the dynamic is so interesting when you have other superstars that say, okay, relax. Or you get a feeling on, hey, is this going to work out with the other guy? And basketball is the most interesting of any sport because it's all about the players, right? It's all about the personalities. It's a very individual
thing is though, Ziggy. I mean, it's interesting how players evolve. Like Westbrook and Harden know each other. They played together in OKC and it didn't work out in Houston. Russell played for Scott Brooks, Washington's coach in Oklahoma City. Brooks loves him. Brooks, you know, gets a sense of what the Wizards are early part of his tenure there. He says, we got to change the tenor here. Go get Westbrook. So they take that, you know, they take that on and it's fascinating. You got all these ex OKC guys all over the place. You got KD in Brooklyn. Is Harden going to join them there? That rumor's still out there.
I don't think it works for either team there. I first looked at this deal, I don't think it's going to work. I think they both teams and Westbrook, they needed to do something different. I don't like the deal. I don't think it's going to work out.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. And we'll get Hugh into the conversation as well on the Westbrook Wall situation, but also, and this feels like it's about the sixth time this has been reported on, the special treatment Kawhi got once he arrived in Los Angeles and how it pissed Clippers teammates off. There is more about that to discuss. We've also got Untucket gift cards to give away, so be listening for your cue to call. We'll play All or Nothing coming up.
Silent Vic loves this song. He plays this in his Camaro for sure.
His Camaro.
Yeah.
I rock.
He's got a Camaro for sure, and he plays this song.
Silent Vic, yay or nay, do you have a Camaro? Oh, come on.
Yeah, he's being modest.
Leather pants. Right. Probably his leather pants, too.
I'm sure if we all pooled together, we could get Silent Vic a Camaro for Christmas.
Maybe they're going cheap, yeah.
By the way, it's the 3rd of December. When is it appropriate? If I said to you, and I didn't do this morning, Hugh, or Ziggy, if I pull you up on FaceTime before the show, if I said happy holidays.
I'm cool with that.
You're good with that?
Yeah.
On the 3rd of December?
Like December 1st to me is usually kind of the kickoff date. That's when you know, we traditionally put up our, you know, 1 foot Christmas tree that we have December 1st.
It's too early.
No.
Yeah.
You got to wait until you put your 18-inch Christmas tree up with the lights on it?
Yeah. Yeah, the one on the wall. I texted our group chat the tree that somebody put up on the wall with two pieces of wood. So you just screw in two pieces of wood on the wall, and then you take, like, what do you call that? Artificial, like, rope of that's like a tree material. And you just go back and forth with it. So it's the shape of a tree on the wall. And then you just can attach lights to it. It goes against the wall. You just put two pieces of wood against it and it's a flat tree.
So it's like two dimensional up against the wall. Or is it 3D? I saw this photo. Here's the thing.
I guess you're right. Two dimensional. That's right. It's a
our group chat gets filled with memes and gifts,
bad jokes,
and it's a lot. Like I'll wake up from an afternoon nap and there are 38 new messages sometimes. I'm like, what the hell have these people been up to? Why aren't they getting their sleep?
I read all the I read all of them. I know you definitely do not read all of them.
I read them, but I don't necessarily respond to all of them.
You're sleeping though. I get it. It's fine. I don't sleep, so I sit there and I like to read all of them.
You might be the most underslept person in 2020.
This was in the group chat from when?
Days ago. Don't keep scrolling. Right, you'll drive
that might take a long time.
Terrible joke. You can get lost in there. Awful picture.
And with due respect to Ziggy, the payoff won't be worth your scrolling. I couldn't even tell what the hell that thing was.
Yeah.
All right. So we're good with a happy holidays on the 3rd 15th. Of December.
Oh,
on the 15th.
Oh, no, you guys can. 15th. I mean, well, when do you think it's appropriate?
You know what I'm doing now. Every day between
now. He's got the 3. I got the 15th. What day do you got?
The 1st of December is good with me. Happy holidays.
Before both of us.
Hanukkah's next week. Like, you know, it's not just Hanukkah. Christmas, right? I mean, it's holiday season. So,
happy Kwanzaa.
I haven't gotten a Christmas greetings card yet.
Well, we have.
So, when.
We got one like
you guys have got one?
Yeah, like about a week ago, actually, the first one.
Wow.
Who mails cards anymore? Cards are nice. Your aunt?
No. Do you know what my friends do? My friends with families, they send happy holidays with a picture of the family and the dog. You know who sends me one of those, actually? Andrew Raycroft still sends me those, but I like them though because he's got his kids on them. So I get they're in Boston. I don't get to see them as much as I'd like. So I get to see a picture of his kids once a year.
Right, and they grow over the years. So it's and they look.
Yeah,
you love the. This is another one. What have you ever gotten the family photo from whoever the sender is and the piece of paper that's typed out
the Christmas letter?
Here's what everybody did.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
We went sailing across the Pacific. We, you know, our son is studying rocket science at MIT.
Isn't that what Instagram and Twitter are for? To brag about what you did? You don't need to write a letter. You just need to post something on Instagram, right?
Yeah, the older generation craps on all these social media platforms. Yeah, they invented the braggadocious crap with the snail mail Christmas letter. That's what that was. You may as well just put a piece of paper in an envelope and have it written, "Our family is better than yours."
That's right.
That's more or less.
This is what you have to aspire to.
Right. If you were us, you'd have done this.
Yeah. No.
Unlucky you.
How do we feel? We talked about Christmas card. How do we feel about the Christmas card, like the electronic Christmas card? You don't actually write anything. You just kind of hit send.
As a
lazy
giver as a
no. Well, yeah, as both.
How many times have you received one of those e-card emails and not even clicked on it?
Yeah, it's the
don't click
Christmas
on it.
Card version of the gift card, right?
it's just easier. Do you save cards? This is another thing. Like, do you save your Christmas card? That's I never know how long. I feel like it's a hot topic. Like
December 26th, those babies are gone.
And then how about like a birthday card or somebody gives you like a congratulations card or something?
I've never gotten one.
Do you keep those forever? Those
depends. It depends. I mean, I think if they come from adults, I mean, if they have a special meeting, if it's your partner or something, that's one thing. But if they come from adults, generally. No, you might pick and choose one or two to keep as a souvenir.
Through the years, you can throw it out.
But if my aunt, if my nephew niece make a drawing for me, that I keep that. Like
I've for got, how yes, long?
I keep those. I keep all of them. I've got them all.
Better man than me.
Yeah, I've got all the drawings from the nephews and niece, but it's. The cards, I just don't know. Like for me, it's the next day. Like you can recycle them. Can you not? It's just.
Well, unless they have the glitter on them.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yes, absolutely.
This guy's going to
count.
I feel like this is a Seinfeld skit too. Am I wrong or no? I feel like I've seen a card in the garbage or something, but I don't know.
Elaine took a racy Christmas card photo once.
No, not even that one. I feel like Jerry had a girlfriend and he threw out the card and the girlfriend got mad. We'll have to look that up. We'll do a deeper dive.
The best part of the nipple episode was when they'd all determine that it was Elaine's nipple. They call Newman in. Hey, Newman, what's that? It's a nipple. And he turns and walks right back out of the room. It's just like, totally matter of fact.
And she grabs George's head. You want to look? Awesome. You want to get a good look?
Awesome. Yeah. Here's your look. Merry Christmas.
So good.
So Kawhi is back in the news. We're getting a better sense of what went down in L.A., according to anonymous sources, of course, but that there were occasions, more than one, and perhaps as many as every game, where the special privileges were not just limited to load management, but that he was also at times warming up before games in a separate space from the rest of his teammates. That, by the way, will never get old.
It's a Hall of Famer right there.
If I could find a Hallmark Christmas card in the aisle at, in the aisle at the drugstore or the card store where you open it up, it's one of those singing cards, and when you open it up, you hear that. I would buy it and send it. So he's got his own space to warm up for games aside from the whole load management deal, and that this was at times an issue in Toronto, but that the Raptors maintained their focus. And I'm telling you right now, the reason it worked in Toronto is Kawhi was crucial to the team. He had, I think, a few layers to this. It was clear that the Raptors had gone as far as they could with Kyle and DeMar as their two best players. You trade DeMar out of town. You go and you get a guy with kind of a strange injury history, but no question, when he's healthy, one of the best players in the game. You accommodate him, and he lives up to his end of the bargain by performing on the court. He plays 60-odd regular season games. He's ready for the playoffs. He's hobbling in the Eastern Conference Final, but it doesn't matter. He helps to will his team to victory, and it all pays off in the end. And you have veterans like Kyle Lowry, like Marc Gasol, and like Serge Ibaka who can help to keep the tenor and the peace of the team when people are looking around saying, what makes him so special?
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, I had George and Beverly and others, but clearly the LA Clippers did not have that internal infrastructure, for lack of a better way to put it, to keep the rest of the house happy while they saw the preferred sibling getting all the special treatment.
Yeah, I can't be a hypocrite on this. I can't come down on the Clippers for the special treatment because yesterday I said that Patrick Roy warranted and deserved special treatment from the Habs when he played for Montreal. He was allowed to he determined which game he played. He determined whether he practiced or not or whether he left practice early. So I'm not going to get angry at the Clippers for giving this guy, who proved the year previous how valuable he is when he gets his load management. All he did was win a championship. But unlike in the NHL, I think players were a lot more hesitant in the NHL to speak up about this, whereas in the NBA, we know that NBA players are not afraid to speak their mind. I just wish some of them would actually go on record and not do the anonymous sources thing. But yeah, they'll speak up about it. Ty Lue says he's going to address this. Good luck with that, because whose feathers do you want to ruffle? Do you want to ruffle, some like second stringer's feathers, or do you want to ruffle Kawhi's feathers? It's the way it is. Kawhi is a superstar.
Well, and here's another layer to it, although not that the Clippers are reflexing to everything that the Lakers do, but the Lakers sign LeBron to a 2-year extension, so he's got, 4 years still to go across the hall. Meanwhile, this Ziggy whole Clippers experiment could blow up next year. You got Paul George who could opt out, and you got Kawhi who could opt out. So if they don't take care of Kawhi, he himself might say enough of this.
Let's not forget either, the Clippers win this year, you don't hear about any of this stuff.
Exactly. I agree with
you. Let's all take a little breather here. And it's like the Cowboys were winning. You think we'd hear about any players being unhappy with McCarthy and his staff? You wouldn't hear a word. Winning solves all this. They are winning right now. If they would have won, or even if they would have gone to the finals, this doesn't come out. It happens. It's going to happen with your stars. You don't like to see it. Warming up in a different place, who cares? Whatever that the report about him getting his own space, the stuff that can cause issues for the team as a whole is the practice stuff. That's one. Either
we're talking
not
about practice.
Yeah, is practice is a big one. Like if you don't have to show up every day, that can cause issues. And I've talked about this a year ago with load management. There can be issues with that. If you're another star on the team and you're like, why am I playing every night? And we're starting to see, you know, a little bit with Paul George, right? I know he hasn't come out and, you know, he hasn't been too harsh on Kawhi, but you got to think if you're another superstar, like I'm trying to think of another big name on a team where a guy gets preferential treatment. Like even if you're a Kyle Lowry on the Raptors and Kawhi comes in and gets all this preferential treatment, you don't think Kyle's sitting there and saying, I've been here so long. This organization is in the position we're in. And then somebody else comes in and gets all this stuff that I've worked hard to establish. You're trying to tell me Kyle Lowry's not thinking that? I'd think that.
Well, but Ziggy also knew that he did. I mean, he wasn't pleased that DeMar got traded out of town. That created some frost between him and Masai. And then he's probably looking around early in the season going, whoa, what's this? But he's mature enough and experienced enough, and he knows he's valuable and valued on this team enough that he's got to circle the wagons and help to maintain the peace. And Gasol and Ibaka and all these guys helped to hold down the fort while Kawhi is getting load managed and all of it.
How hard is that? How hard is that going to be for Ty Lue to come in there and change the culture, change the chemistry?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it. I mean, it's not going to be easy. Anytime you change the culture, I mean, it's not one. It's funny. It's not one person, but it starts with one person. Like I don't know how to explain that really, but it's difficult. It's not just it's not an overnight thing, you know. I'll leave that there. But so the players on the team, so the missing the practices and stuff and not being there around the guys, that could be detrimental to the team. I think not traveling with the team or being late. Like what was the other report from Kawhi? Like he would be late for the planes or the buses and the charters.
Yeah. I mean, sitting on a tarmac waiting for a teammate, that would be bothersome.
Because he's living in San Diego and he's allowed to live, 3 hours without traffic? Like he's living 3 hours without traffic. Like, can you imagine one of the Leafs living in close to Ottawa and like commuting to the rink?
Well, you'd be choppering.
I know it's not 3 hours.
He's getting choppered in. He's not stuck. He's choppered.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know that. We don't know if he's driving in. Like, why was he? So then why is he late? If he has access to a chopper, he shouldn't be late. But sitting, I've seen planes leave without players. One minute. I've seen players get sent down because they were 2 minutes late to the opening meeting before training camp started in September. Oof. I've seen players that were on an NHL team get moved. So, yeah, imagine sitting on a plane. Yeah.
Could you imagine Kawhi playing a G League game for showing up late? No chance. No chance that happens.
Send him to the G.
Timmy Leeper at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. We'll play a little yay or nay at 7:30. We're looking forward to this. He was named a Companion of the Order of Canada over the weekend. Mark Tewksbury, gold medalist swimmer at the 1992 Barcelona Games for Canada. Now a Companion of the Order of Canada. We'll talk to Mark about that wonderful honor. And Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, the stove is on a simmer and it's only heating up. They've got their top five wingers on Canadian-based NHL teams. And they didn't like our Twitter reaction to that.
See those picks? I can't wait.
416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We've got $100 in Nantucket gift cards to give away today. We'll do that when we play All or Nothing next.
It's time.
time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we did not have a winner yesterday, so for what feels like the ninth time this week, I teed up the wrong total in Nantucket gift cards. We have $200 in Nantucket gift cards to attempt to give away today. All or Nothing is three true or false questions. Get them all right or get them all wrong, you win. So don't hang up if you get number one wrong, because that just means you got to get numbers two and three incorrect on purpose. Let's go to Port Perry for Mark. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, guys. Good morning. How are you?
We are excellent, and you're about to be better. Holiday gift coming your way here. $200 in Nantucket gift cards. Ziggy, fire away.
All right, big trade in the NBA, Russell Westbrook and John Wall. Both players. That is true.
Sorry.
Give this man a prop.
Sorry,
okay,
guys.
Here's the question. Both players were selected first overall in the NBA draft. True or false?
False.
That's correct. Wall was in 2010.
Well, Wall was taken. Yeah, Wall was taken first overall.
And Westbrook wasn't.
Correct. Yep. Fourth overall in 08. So there you go. You're in good shape here, Mark.
Thank
you. Get the next two correct, and the prize is yours.
All right, Mark, here's your second question. On this day, way back in 1997, Latrell Sprewell had his contract terminated after trying to choke out his coach, PJ Carlissimo. How could we ever forget that?
True.
That is true, but
give this man
the
prize.
That's not the question. The team Sprewell was playing for at the time was the New York Knicks. True or false?
True.
No, sir. Golden State Warriors terminated Sprewell's four-year, $32 million deal, which at the time was pretty big.
You know, it feels weird to say this, given all of the success of the last 8 or 9 years of Golden State Warriors. That choke job was about the only thing the Warriors were known for for decades.
They were terrible.
They were as irrelevant a franchise across the major four sports on this continent as any team.
Yep.
And Steph Curry and everybody who came with him obviously changed that. That's an unfortunate thing. My question was going to be, Mark Tewksbury joins us at 8 o'clock this morning. That also would have been true. He won Olympic gold in 1992 when the games were held in Barcelona. The answer to that question was true because Mark did win the gold in the 100-meter men's backstroke. Mark and Port Perry did not win, so we've got $300 in Nantucket gift cards to attempt to give away tomorrow when we play All or Nothing. Tim Leeper will join us next. Ziggy, are you going to have my back later this morning when Stewie and Bourne come on?
I'm still putting my five together. I've been working on a couple drafts for the day. I didn't respond to Stewie, though. I didn't want to stir the pot anymore. I know he's coming after us. We're after the show ends. That's like, sorry, you got to catch me the next day. There's a certain time frame you can get me on Twitter. After that, I'm off. That's it. I take breaks.
There must be a period of time, though, where Stewie's got some free time to slap the, you know, our faces on top of those wrestling
gifts that he runs. He has his phone on him 24/7, and he's making gifs. That's all he's doing. Gift factory.
What do you think he does? Do you think he just chauffeurs his 9 kids around to school, and once he's done dropping them off, he's got like 15 minutes to mess around on his social media? That's got to be
Speaking about a gift factory, maybe that's what he does. He gets the kids to do the gifts. He's getting them. That's child
gotta learn
slave
him young.
Labor.
gotta learn him
that's
young.
That's like the labor that the
yeah. So Stewie, anyway, story is Stewie and Bourne have come up with their top five wingers on Canadian-based NHL teams, and they pumped them out yesterday, and we had some fun on social media with that. And so we'll go over our lists of the top five wingers on Canadian-based NHL teams when they join us at 8:30. Mark Tewksbury, a Canadian Olympian named to the Companionship, the Order of Canada, joins us in an hour. A little yay or nay later on. It is time for the call of the Wayward Ginger. Where is he this morning? The man with red hair foraging for berries in the freezing cold woods of an unnamed portion of Muskoka. Here he is, Tim Leeper.
Is that lots of snow.
One of the better? No, you don't. Really?
Oh, tons of snow. Yeah, big snow day the other night.
You're kidding. Because I know for a fact that Ottawa is drenched in rain and all of its snow has melted. I know that we've got like a dusting, but not much. We've gotten as much or more rain than snow. You're just buried in it?
We are buried in snow. We have tons of snow and no barbershops here. So it's a perfect mix.
Ziggy, I did not, by the way, Leap, I did not wear a hat today. I've got one of my, and when I say this, the term is loose. I've got one of my finer sweaters on today, so I figured I'd look the part, you know, somewhat professional. I'm not in track pants. I'm in blue jeans, which is also new for me over the last 10 months. So I thought, well, I can't wear a ball cap backwards if I'm wearing a nicer sweater. I can't keep my damn hair out of my eyes. It's driving me nuts.
I can't figure out why your hair grows upwards where it doesn't like grow in the back. Mine grows in the back. I look like Joe Dirt a little bit right now. If you remember that movie.
I'm yes. sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. You look like Roland. You look like Roland Shit on Schitt's Creek. That's who you
that's
look
a
like.
Better reference.
That's
right there.
That's who you look like. All right. So let's get to the baseball news.
Let's
yesterday
do it.
Was the non-tender deadline. So, to speak baseball ease, for the listener who may not know, arbitration-eligible players are players who have been in the major leagues for a minimum of 3 years. Don't get into Super 2 stuff, Leap. I'm not here for that deep a dive. But for a minimum of 3 years to a maximum of six, because after you have completed your 6 year of service time, you are eligible for free agency if at that point you are without a contract. However, if you are not tendered a contract by the offseason deadline, which this year happened to be yesterday, you are a free agent. The Blue Jays non-tendered reliever AJ Cole and first baseman, third baseman, left-handed hitting former Red Sox Brewer Travis Shaw. Other teams non-tendered some players who at the very least have name value, although I'm unclear on just how consequential they could be for a team at this particular point. Are there any names on the non-tender list who stood out to you?
I thought it was kind of I thought it was kind of a letdown. I was kind of hoping to, not hoping to see, but see like if the Yankees tendered Gary Sanchez, Luke Voit, guys like that. And I thought the list that came out was kind of like, not that great of guys. You know, I look at it from the Blue Jays perspective and the areas where they need to, or have said publicly that they want to improve this year, which is what, run prevention and strike throwing. So, which means, you know, play better defense and throw more strikes.
Yeah, that's all run prevention right there. Throwing strikes and defense. Yeah.
But I looked and like, you know, I looked at the center fielders. I looked at the shortstops. There was nothing that really like came out and jumped out at you. I thought there were some interesting guys in center field, which would be upgrades like on a fourth outfielder spot if they don't land a free agent. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, there's some good free agents out. Obviously they're tied to them. They're talking to them from what we understand. And I think some guys like Albert Amor Jr., who would be a guy that, you know, who's a really good defender in center field that's kind of underperformed with the bat. A guy like Brian Goodwin, who they were tied to a little bit last year, but they didn't get him. So I don't think they're that tied to him. And I think just the biggest thing is if you're a right-handed relief pitcher in the game right now, like there's a million of you out there. And like, I think it's their contracts are going to be low. But in that group of non-tendered relievers, like, relievers every other year they're really good or really bad, so you just kind of like get as many as you can and see if it sticks. And I think that's, you know, the bounce back candidate is kind of the guy that's out there right now.
How many players, Lee, do you think are going to use the excuse of a shortened season? Well, not even a shortened season, an abbreviated season. With the 60 games, like how many do you think players are going to say, well, I didn't have a chance this year to show and play the way that I can play. Like, do you think that's going to come up? Because this isn't just a half a season. It was 60 games. And it's just, I see agents going to teams and saying, well, my guy didn't have a chance to show everything he had. You think these players are actually thinking that off years?
I think they're going to use every agent's going to use that. And I think the owners are definitely going to, the general managers and president are going to say the other way. Yeah. It, you know, they're going to hold a lot of value to it to where they can save some money. But if you look at it, 60 games, like, and I was talking to a coach, major league hitting coach yesterday, and he, yeah, see, that was my little drop. That was on my group chat.
Oh, I love it.
Whoa. No, I was talking to
unnamed major league hitting coach.
Oh, but you won't give us a name. I see how it is.
Anyway, that's as far as I'm going to go with that. But essentially, they played April and May. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, they had a rush spring training in April and May. And like a guy like Christian Yelich hit 200, like that's not going to happen. I think he's probably going to be a pretty good player in a 162-game season. But I think the biggest value here, Zig, is like the teams that are able with 60 games. If you were able to evaluate your own players really well, and the teams that kept human beings in their scouting departments and were able to like dig in and do as much scouting on other organizations as you can, I think those are the teams that are really going to benefit from the fact that it was a shortened season, and that teams, you know, maybe you overvalued the 60 games, maybe you undervalued the 60 games, but like, you also have firm projections on what guys are going to be based on their abilities. And this is where scouting and just a good eye for people and things and makeup. This is those teams that kept people on the ground this year, I think, are really going to benefit from the shortened season and what's taking place.
Don't roll your eyes on the personal side of this when I bring this particular name up, but you'll know it's of interest to me. I think it's of general interest to baseball, though, Leap. Like Kyle Schwarber,
I rolled my eyes.
Why are
I'm
you
sorry.
Laughing? Well, because I'm bringing up a Chicago Cub. I think he's a really interesting discussion point here, because he was going into his last year pre-free agency eligibility, and the Cubs said, "See ya." And what is Kyle Schwarber? I mean, he was one of the young players on that. Now, I know he blew his knee out in 2016 and didn't come back into the World Series, and that was kind of a heroic story because he'd torn his ACL the first week of the regular season. But he was a left-handed hitting power bat who can absolutely crush right-handed pitching. But he doesn't hit so well against lefties. And a former catcher turned outfielder at the big league level, he is a marginal, if I'm being diplomatic, a marginal defender at best. What is the true value of a player like that, a guy who can mash right-handed pitching in a league full of people who can mash right-handed pitching, but in many cases are also good at other things?
Is he kind of like a rich man's Daniel Vogelbach a little bit? Because he's like,
oh
he's,
my God, is that what he's become?
He's playable in left field, but he's not a great defender, and he hasn't hit for average. And so basically, it comes down to like most guys in the game right now. Like he's a left-handed hitter who has to hit against a shift. His value is in putting the ball in the seats, but he's hitting 200 or in the low 200s. So I think those guys are out there right now, and like, he came in with splash. I remember he got hurt and then he came back for the playoffs and it was a big deal, but he did have a couple good years in there. I just think it's going to be a tough market for him. I think he has to fit a specific need. And, you know, with maybe the National League going to the designated hitter, which I don't know why they're waiting to decide. Well, I guess I do know why they're waiting, but like, they need to like figure this out. I mean, there's some jobs open for him, and hopefully again, he's one of those I put the finger quotes up, the bounce back candidate that, you know, or someone's trying to cash in on what he did a few years ago and hope that they can reclaim that form again.
Like, I mean, the reason one of the reasons I bring him up is that there's cachet there, right? There's name value. Played on a marquee team in a World Series championship year that ended a long drought, national following, etc. And if I'm a Blue Jays fan, if I'm not following the National League closely, I would hear that name and go, oh. And I would think to myself, lefty, who can hook him around Pesky's pole at Fenway Park, who can play to the short porch at Yankee Stadium on the road, who could probably hit very, very well in Rogers Center, but he doesn't address any of the run prevention issues that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are very appropriately focused on. I mean, there's probably no chance he's coming here.
No, and I think they have better players there already. And like basically, like is he Rowdy Tellez, who's except he's an outfielder. But I think when this is all said and done, they may have more outfielders than you know. They're tied to a lot of outfielders. They had three outfielders that had really good offensive years. So I don't know if it's a fit here whatsoever. I know you want ex Cubs here, but I think Almora, if they don't get a premier free agent, like Almora would be a better fit at times just because of the defense and the run prevention aspect of his game.
So Scotty talks a lot about free agency and how there's no action in Major League Baseball. And I agree with him. It takes forever for the league to kind of get going, and everyone kind of talks about the non-tender deadline, and as soon as that comes and goes, then teams start to figure out what's available, who they can go after. But there's just so many question marks, right? Like, is a season going to start on time? What's happening with the DH position, right? Are teams actually going to wait because they aren't sure about what the season's going to entail and what are the new rule changes going to be? Like, do you think teams are waiting for those things to iron out before they make big moves?
I think a little bit. And I think the DH is a huge thing. I mean, that's 15 teams that don't know whether or not they're going to have to sign a hitter or not. So, and I know that the league is actually floated, which is, again, it goes back to the beginning. When the league starts talking about how they're worried about the players, I don't know if that's a great play, but like they want something back for the DH. I mean, they're trying to use a DH as a leverage point to get something back for the CBA or whatever. And that's not good for the game right now. But I also think too, like the agents are waiting too, because I think the agents think there's going to be a better market, and it's not just on the teams to not offer contracts, but it's the agents on you know, who's going to be the first agent to have their client sign as well. So I think it's kind of a two-way street there. And I think there is a lot of waiting going on. And there's going to be a glut of players that are on the market that are very, very similar. And then these top free agent guys, I think agents are going to have shown, and with Bryce, you know, I know last time I was on, Scotty talked about Bryce Harper and not signing until the middle of spring training. I think agents are willing to wait to find the best deal possible. And if that comes in the middle of spring training, then they're going to do it. So it's going to be interesting what happens with Rio Muto. It's going to be interesting what happens with Bauer. And until these pieces really fall, yeah, I think you can expect a lot more quiet times ahead.
So for the Jays, if they have to go after one player, Leap, who, if they could sign one player, who would it be? You can't sign anybody else this offseason. A player they go after that's available right now, one player, who should they get? Can't get anybody else.
I would, again. No,
Wayward Ginger needs to lock it in.
Honestly, I hate my answer because, like, I think it makes the most difference, and I would sign Rio Muto. I think it gives you. Listen, Danny Jansen is one of my favorite human beings in the world. And I think he's going to be a really good catcher. I don't think it's going to kill him to sit back and you know, be a backup or just get limited time. But like, he's such a game changer. He does so many things well. He's a tremendous human being. He's super focused. He's a pro. He elevates your game, much like when we got Russ Martin, who had been to the playoffs every year of his life. Like, Rio Muto's a guy who's super principled, super good, can walk in a room and command respect, but he also plays the game so well. He's a catcher that runs bases and does everything. So, like, for me, that's a premium position, a guy that is known to be really good, and he fits your clubhouse. So I think it's time to get off for them. I think it's a really great time to get off, like, well, maybe this is going to be good, maybe this is going to be great, and get to the locks, get to the guys who are going to be good. Like if you go for a shortstop, I think Didi Gregorius would be a great sign. But maybe just add a couple years. I know that moves Bo Bichette off shortstop, but again, it's a guy who's known to be a great shortstop. So I think, and George Springer is a great baseball player. I think with George Springer, I think you need to bring someone else. Like you bring George Springer and DJ LeMahieu in, like the length of your lineup, like you're going to be an offensive juggernaut. It's going to be, they're great at bat after great at bat to go along with the guys that are there right now. And it also solidifies the defensive position. So to answer your question for one player, I just gave you five.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the moment you brought up Real Muto, I should probably pronounce his name correctly, Leap, given that my job is to do that. I know exactly who you're thinking of when you bring up Real Muto's name. You're thinking of Russ Martin 2015, right? I mean, bringing in a catcher on a long-term contract, a veteran guy with some cachet who's been there and done that. It was Donaldson, yes. It was getting Reyes off of shortstop and bringing in Tulowitzki and all of the additions other than Tulowitzki that final week of July. But Russell Martin played a huge, huge role. It was a major upgrade over the catching that the Jays had in the seasons prior to 2015.
It's a huge mindset thing too. The Raptors went to the division finals a few years and then they won the championship. So I would think after they won the championship, they thought they knew what they needed to do to win to get there. But once they got there, they're like, wow, now they know and now they can get there. And even though Real Muto hasn't been on one of those teams, I think he changes the mindset of your clubhouse. And listen, they made the playoffs this year, albeit like they were the eighth seed and it's going to be a little bit tougher to get in next year. But like he's a guy that definitely changes the mindset. He sets a higher standard. That's what Russ did for us. That's what JD did for us. And obviously when you brought in all the other guys with Tulo and David and Ben Revere and those guys, like they changed our mindset too. But I think Real Muto is a guy that moves the needle that way for sure.
Leap, we'll do it again next week. What are the plans for today? Are you shoveling the walkway?
Do you have I don't think we've addressed this. Do you do shovel or do you do the snowblower?
My driveway is way too long. So I do a combination of both. The really important thing for me is my OCD kind of kicks in, is that my lines have got to be really straight. I want to build like really nice snowballs around. So like it has to look good. Like this is all I got to do. But for a kid that grew up in California to have the snow, like I want this thing to look like a postcard.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So what happens if like the snow wall on the side of the driveway isn't just so?
I go down to the local brewery and then I park it in my driveway and then I get the shovel out and I make it good again.
You're pretty much Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation at this point. Poopers.
You know what I want? I want a Christmas. I think Leap should do the Christmas cards of him shoveling the driveway in Muskoka. I think that I would be happy with that. I would be okay with that.
Rubber boots, boxer yes. shorts.
No, no. He's got to have the robe on. Robe on with the rubber boots.
Robe over top. Robe okay. over top. Yeah.
With the shovel and then just the, happy holidays.
And and then like on top, you'd in a nice neat font, you say only 3 years ago, I was working in Major League Baseball. And look at me now. Look at me now.
Justin Smoke reminds me of that all the time.
You still text with him? How's he doing?
He's on my group text. I really can't talk about it.
Oh, come on.
But
he's your group text. No chance always, of that.
That was my name. That was my name drop on my group text.
That was always the, I don't know, was he like this with you coaches? He would always, a media guy like me would walk up to him and he'd turn around, you know him, right? Poop eating grin on his face. What you got? What you got?
The most aware human being in a clubhouse ever in a world that's completely dysfunctional. He was like, it's unbelievable when you talk to him, but to say he was the most normal guy, he definitely was.
Yeah. Honestly, he was more aware than anybody else. Or you're just talking about he's a normal dude.
No, he was aware. Like he knew everything. He knew when to give you the jab at the right time, guys the jab. But like there was nothing in that clubhouse that went on that he didn't know about. And it was just, it was great. I mean, it was just such a great thing. And it just in his really quiet Southern way, like he kept everything in line. Even when we had like some guys in that clubhouse that were studs, like he knew when to pick his spots and he really helped keep our team together.
You bet. Goose Creek, South Carolina. Justin Smoak. We'll talk again next week, Leap.
All right.
Unless we decide not to invite you back.
Can I get a pardon before I leave here? Can I get a preemptive pardon that I can come back?
You're in Canada now, pal. We don't hand those out. We don't hand those out. Tim Leeper, former Blue Jays first base and outfield coach, with us on Thursdays at the 7 o'clock top of the hour each and every week. Mark Tewksbury, a Canadian Olympic gold medalist swimmer from the 1992 Olympics, named to the companionship of the Order of Canada. He'll be our guest at 8 o'clock. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne. I count on you, tag team partner, right? You're not going to turn on me. You're not turning heel on me.
No, I'm not turning on you. After Stewie went after us with the gifts yesterday, I'm definitely not turning on you today.
All right.
Because those were some deep cuts yesterday.
When I reach for the tag, the gift factory. When I reach for the tag, your hand will be there.
Absolutely.
All right. Excellent stuff.
Are you picking five wing? Are you going to actually do that?
I am doing that. Right. And we will see. Okay. We will see how it all shakes down. We've got our top five wingers on Canadian-based NHL teams, playing off of what Stewie and Bourne posted on Twitter yesterday. Like I said, Tewksbury at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Yay or nay next. Text line to 590-590, responses to earlier conversations about snail mail cards for the holidays, money and all that. Is Josh and Burlington's grandmother cool?
Yay!
My 84-year-old grandma started sending me e-cards, and if she sends me money, it's an e-transfer. All on her own. There you go, Zig. To hell with the snail mail. Chris from Barrie, you forgot the most important holiday. Happy Festivus. Get your polls up, fellas.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Is Festivus the 22nd or the 23rd? I think it's the 20th. All the memes come out on one of those 2 days, and I forget every year whether it's the 22nd or 23rd. I think it's the 23rd.
I've got some ugly Christmas sweaters ready to go. Do you remember the one from last year? No, I'm not going to talk. We'll bring it up. It's too early. Come on. It's the third.
Will you wear one next week?
I'll wear one a week. There we go.
Excellent. Will you wear one tomorrow then? Once every Friday.
On the 4th of December, you can wear an ugly. No, you.
It's 3 weeks to Christmas tomorrow, dude. 3 weeks. That's it. Only 3 weeks.
I'll do one tomorrow and we'll post it. Fine.
Oh, we'll post it. You ready for a little yay or nay? Hypothetical scenarios, potential scenarios that we either say yes to or no to in a yay or nay fashion.
Let's do it.
Yay or nay, if the Steelers end up going 16-0 this season, it should be seen as a more difficult accomplishment than any team in the past. So effectively the 14-0 1972 Miami Dolphins or the 16-0 2007 New England Patriots, because of COVID protocols and games constantly being postponed. Pittsburgh's achievement, should they be 16-0, should be viewed as more significant than the 72 Dolphins or the 07 Patriots because of the challenges COVID-related they have faced. Yay or nay?
Nay. There are difficulties. Yes. The difficulties to the season are, I think for me, are different than most people. For me, the hardest thing is no fans, which I don't think people will talk about. I think it's strange. Like the difficulties of a season, I think are the no fans would play a factor. I think it plays a factor in a lot of players.
You hear Chris Collinsworth on the NBC broadcast yesterday afternoon was saying, and I mean, this is nothing new necessarily, but he keeps being wowed by it. He's like, we can hear all the conversations on the field from up here. I don't think he was talking about just the on-field mics. Players get to yelling at each other and all that. You can hear that throughout an empty stadium.
Yeah, like that would be a big one for me. Another big one is the coaches having their faces covered. Like the coaches with the masks on, there you don't have that communication. Sometimes it's your communication with your coach is nonverbal. And I think in football, it's more nonverbal than everything else. Do you know what I mean? Like it's different, right? Like what soccer would be another close game. But if you want to talk the four major sports in North America, I think football, I feel like you need to see the coach and kind of what's he thinking, what you can't yell. You can't call plays. You can't yell it. You know what I mean? So those are the big ones for me, but I mean, the Steelers aren't going 16-0. So how about that one? They're not going 16-0. You want to know why? Is I didn't like the game yesterday from the Steelers, and it's a game they should have won easily, and that was the issue with if you were going to bet the game. Were the Steelers going to come out and play Steeler ball, or were they going to come out and just go through the motions?
But remember, Ziggy,
that's the problem.
They should have gone to Dallas and smoked the Cowboys, and they eked that one out. All I'm saying is that great teams, when they go 14-2 or 15-1 or 16-0, whatever the case may be, not every game is a 25-point victory, right?
I understand
that. And our expectations of a team like Pittsburgh go way up when we look at their record. Well, they should be just destroying everybody.
Here's the thing about it, though. I don't like the way they won. And Mike Tomlin said the same thing in his postgame.
But he's got to keep the expectations high.
I know. But see, Mike Tomlin is the guy that I don't see. Like, he's the last coach that would do the opposite. You know how we always talk about, oh, yeah, when the team's going well, you got to beat them down. And then when they're playing bad, you got to pick them up. Mike Tomlin's not that guy. If I had to say one coach was not that guy, it's Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I don't.
He's not that guy.
I just think he's a real dude. And
yeah, he is. And that's why he wouldn't do it for just the sake of doing it.
I will repeat what I have said on air and off air to anybody who will listen to me yammer. Mike Tomlin is never talked about enough in the discussions about best coach in the NFL. He just isn't. Mm-hmm. And it's not fair to him. His Steelers are perennially good.
He should win it this year.
And I mean, look, they're going to be a 13-win team at worst, I would say, probably a 15-win team.
And I don't want to keep deep dive into Pittsburgh, but I feel like the Mike Tomlin-Roethlisberger combination is like, do you think there's like parallels with the Belichick-Brady? It's like
there hasn't been as much clear-cut dominance. Roethlisberger has had more injuries through the years than Brady. There have been some years where Baltimore has won the division. Cincinnati was a division winner in the Marvin Lewis years a couple of times. Like, that's my only hesitation on it.
I just mean more in the fact of, would they have both been this successful if they were in two different spots? Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like they're made for each other.
There's no question it's worked. And I just think Tomlin, I mean, he's just amazing at how he handles personalities. Roethlisberger is a complicated guy, has had some off-field troubles way in the past. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, all those guys. I will yay that one.
Yay!
I do think. I mean, remember, too, it wasn't just what happened yesterday and all the postponements with the Ravens game. The Steelers ended up being affected by the whole Tennessee Titans situation earlier on in the season, somewhat indirectly. Their bye week ended up being moved. They had a game or two to shuffle. You could become easily distracted. Not necessarily it sinks your season, but it can sink a week for you. It can sink a result in the game, and they have powered through all of it. Oh, we're coming up with different ways to ask the same question. Zig, I love it when this happens. Here we go. Yay or nay? It may be tense right now, but the NHL and the NHLPA will have full labor peace just in time for Christmas. We're not asking when the season starts, but we will open our gifts on Christmas morning knowing that the exhale has happened and there is labor peace between both sides.
Yay.
Yay!
I'm not going to say it's going to be, the schedule's going to be laid out, but all the pieces are going to be there for, you know, they're going to have to redo the CBA, touch it up. The players are going to have to make some concessions. I think maybe the league's going to have to give something up for that to happen. They're going to know. I think we're not playing January 1st. I think it's bigger than the money. I think the players don't want to give up Christmas. I think that's even a bigger deal. I have not heard that from any of the players.
They'd be happy to get to camp on like the 27th.
26th, everyone flies in.
Yeah, you don't care so much about New Year's, but Christmas, let me be at home with my family.
Yeah, players, this is not, and this is just values of the league, right? The NBA is known to play on Christmas. The NHL doesn't, and it's just not part of the league. It's just one of those strange things.
Yeah, the NHL used to have games on the 23rd and 26th. They've even knocked boxing. This is a normal season.
Yeah.
They've even, Boxing Day is now contractually negotiated between both sides to be an off day.
In the minors, I used to get 2 days off. I used to play 23rd and 26th. I was allowed to go home after the 23rd game, or I'd fly home on the 24th morning, and then we had to fly back on the 26th. It didn't matter where.
You should write a children's book, Christmas in Lowell. Christmas with the Loch Monster.
Buddy,
what must it have been like?
We'll get into that. I've been sent down, like, I've been one of those casualties where, you know, the team wants to save money, so they send all the guys
right
down to the minors.
Right before the roster freeze?
Yeah.
Oh.
So now I'm like in a hotel at the Holiday Inn in Lowell, and just tell me, like, I mean, it's like dumping snow. I'm in the Holiday Inn. All my bags are in, like, everything's packed up. I'm like ordering Chinese food. Like, I can't walk outside. It's like bottle wine by myself.
Cracked a tooth on a 2-day-old cinnamon bun at the Continental breakfast.
See, those are the things that no one sees. Everyone just sees the cars and the contracts and the TV and appearances.
These are like Joey Votto. All he sees is the 200 miles an hour in a Corvette down a freeway near Yuma, Arizona.
But Yuma.
What we don't know are about the 2-day-old cinnamon buns at the Continental breakfast at the Holiday Inn in Lowell, Mass. Christmas in Crapchester. That sounds like a really good alliteration. You could probably come out with an album for that. I will yay that one as well. I think we'll have
some.
Peace. The Houston Rockets get John Wall and a conditional first round draft pick in 2023 in their trade with Washington, sending Russell Westbrook to the Wizards. The Rockets are clear winners of the trade. Yay or nay?
Nay. I think Westbrook in Washington, I don't think either of them are going to work out great, but Westbrook has a better chance. That one will, I just think when you reunite with an old coach and maybe there's something there where you can, we talk about culture, where you can kind of build that culture again. You have a chance. I think there's just so many question marks with John Wall and Hugh. I'm more concerned about what they have in Houston, right? Harden, like we they don't know, right?
This is definitely a nay. And there are a couple of reasons for it. I'll start with the focus on the first round pick. 2021 is a deep draft. Washington still has its first rounder in 2021. That's crucial. And then the other thing is, you know, you don't even know what you're getting in John Wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy has started to break down. The Achilles is a serious injury, but he has had different injury issues in the past. Missed the last year and a half with the Achilles, but has played only 73 games over the last three seasons. He has not played a full season of basketball since 2016-2017. So, no, if Houston's goal is to break this thing up, if James Harden is eventually on the move, and they're starting effectively from scratch, and they've just got to swallow John Wall's contract for this period of time, I get their motives, but no, they are not a clear winner of this trade. Special treatment, star treatment. It's such a normal thing in sports that Kawhi's treatment by the LA Clippers had absolutely nothing to do with their eventual demise and lost to Denver in the conference semifinals in the bubble.
Yay.
Yay!
I think there's deeper issues with the Clippers. I don't think they have the roster. I don't think they have the chemistry that we always talk about. There was issues with coaching and were players being put in the right spots to excel. So I think it's an excuse. This is all coming up. It's an excuse because they didn't win. Also, special treatment and star treatment, Scotty, are two separate things. I'm just going to say.
Learn us.
Well, special treatment is something that if you have, okay, so you need to understand that players are all like, if Kawhi makes a mistake or some player on the bench makes a mistake, the player on the bench is going to maybe get traded and Kawhi, nothing's going to be said to him. So that just gives you a little idea. Everyone has a leash. None of them are like the same length, right? And the better you are, the longer that leash is. So special treatment is like, I don't like saying special treatment because if it's a special treatment of a player and he's allowed to do whatever he wants, like being late for a plane, that's kind of like, or you don't have to show up for practice. That's, you can kind of go with special treatment with that. The star treatment is, that's just better players are allowed to make more mistakes or allowed to do what they kind of want. So there is a difference between the two.
We have some breaking NBA news, which we will get to in our Something to Chew On segment in just a moment. But first, we've cleaned out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy, and we've made mystery boxes, which contain signed jerseys and more for you to win. Today is the last day to collect keywords and enter. So you need to be listening during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid to collect the keywords. And then what you do is you text them to 590-590 with your name and your city. Then you tune in tomorrow morning at 7:30 to hear your name. Last chance to hear your name. So we're about to tell you who we drew from all of the entries that we got yesterday. And if it is you, call us back within 590 seconds to immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy and to qualify for the last mystery box, which we will open on the air at 7:30 Monday morning, and we will announce the winner for that box right after we open it. Today's name out of yesterday's qualifiers is Tony Molzan from Hamilton. Tony Molzan from Hamilton. Your 590 seconds starts now. Call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590 on your cell. If you did not hear your name, that is, if your name is not Tony Molzan, stay tuned for the next keyword during Good Show after 9 o'clock, and you can check out sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Breaking news out of the NBA. And, yeah, it's got something to do with an LA-based team. Surprise, surprise. We'll get to it next. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. We've been all over the latest reports about Kawhi and the dysfunction with the Los Angeles Clippers. And
I'm a fun guy.
Bet you're going to laugh at this news, Kawhi. The breaking news. At Clutch Sports CEO Rich Paul has told ESPN that the Brow, Anthony Davis, is about to put pen on paper on a 5-year, $190 million max contract extension with the LA Clipper, LA Clippers, good Lord, the LA Lakers. The deal includes an early termination option prior to the fifth season. Deal could be signed as soon as today. Well, early termination after year four, what coincides with the end of year four? The end of LeBron's contract, because he signed a 2-year extension on the 2 years he had left yesterday. Clippers are whining. Lakers, defending champions, going about their business.
Here's a hot take. They win two more championships within that 4-year span. 2.
That would get LeBron's total to 6.
Mm-hmm.
It would be 6 titles in 12 appearances, mm-hmm. if you're right. And he might, who knows, yeah. he might go to some more finals.
Maybe
well
I should amend that. At least 2.
At least 2 more.
Yeah. They're good and getting better.
They're functional.
Yeah.
All the silliness is...
And that stability appeals to free agents.
Well, yes, it does. Yeah. Number 1 and number 2. They're one of the marquee franchises in the league. And number 3, they're Los Angeles-based.
Doesn't hurt.
Palm trees in the winter. Never hurt anybody.
LeBron James. It's all about LeBron James.
Pretty good.
Yep.
LeBron James, you. One of the all-time great athletes. Not the all-time great basketball players. That's obvious.
Outside of basketball.
One of the all-time and one of the key influencers from an athletics perspective generation.
Does a lot more than just basketball. A lot of respect.
Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, the top 5 Canadian-based wingers. This started an unusual battle on social media. So weird. And up next, Mark Tewksbury. Olympic gold medalist in swimming from the 1992 Summer Games and now named to the Companionship of the Order of Canada, one of the highest civilian honors in our country. Mark Tewksbury next. Well, you probably remember his accomplishments in the pool. A gold medal in the 100-meter backstroke back at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. He has been omnipresent in our lives, activating for so many important causes since. And just earlier this week, he was named a Companion of the Order of Canada. We are pleased to welcome to the program the great Mark Tewksbury. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm better now. I'm the great Mark Tewksbury.
Well, I mean...
My life just improved significantly.
You know, it's funny. We had a conversation with somebody not too long ago, and I think I called them legendary, and they said, no. You call somebody legendary when they're dead.
Exactly.
So don't ever do that again. I'm not looking at the past tense. You're still a good dude, man. You're still a good dude.
Thank you.
Listen, Mark, I mean, this is quite an honor for you. When did you find out and how did you find out?
I found out about a month ago. It was a Monday morning. I got a call on my home line, which nobody calls except for my mom and my partner's mom. And sometimes Canada Revenue.
Yeah, well, they need your SIN number right now.
Exactly. And my passport, visa number. So I almost didn't pick up the phone because I didn't recognize the number, but I thought, okay, I'll pick it up. And it was somebody from the Governor General's office giving me the news. And it was amazing.
How does it go? Did you call your family when you found out? Who was the first call you made?
Well, listen, first of all, most people don't know much about the Order of Canada. I'm going to make it my mission to educate people because it's so interesting. But I didn't realize, people keep saying, was this a promotion? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Is this a promotion? So there's 3 levels within the order. There's a membership, there's the officer, and then the top level is called companion. And most people enter at one of the lower levels and get promoted up to companion potentially in their lifetime. So I went right in at companion. So I had to learn a lot about the order and all that it meant, but I knew it was a big deal. I didn't realize there's only 165 living Canadians at any one time that can be a companion. So it's like, whoa. I just kind of sat and cried like a baby, if I can be honest, in my kitchen. I was so touched. And my partner was out for groceries and he came home and I actually called him and said, are you close? He's like, what's going on? And he came, I said, it's all good. But I was just really overwhelmed by it. It meant so much to me. And it was just, it's like a kind of a lifetime achievement award at 52, which is great. But it also gives me some real runway to do stuff with, which is, equally exciting for me.
Yes, and I mean, you have been an advocate, an activist for a long time now, and it, as you said, it gives you a pathway to continue to do that. We're with Mark Tewksbury, named a companion of the Order of Canada, and this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Take us back, Mark. I mean, you're an elite athlete. You're an elite swimmer. You're growing up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, in the 1980s as a gay boy, as a young gay man. I can't imagine that that would have been easy in a normal circumstance. I would imagine it was extremely difficult with the profile that you cultivated. How did you work through that such that you were still able to compete and compete successfully at the highest levels in your sport?
That's a good question. You know, there's a part of it when you're young and you don't know what you don't know. And I think in a way that was really good. I mean, I only knew growing up in Calgary. So I wouldn't, you know, I didn't have an experience like growing up in a major metropolitan city like Paris or Toronto or, you know, like anywhere else. So this was just my reality. Sport, you know, sport always has its upsides in that there's great closeness and you've got camaraderie. But it also can turn to sort of, you know, lots of horrible slang and terrible words used in locker rooms, et cetera. So I just balanced it. I was good at what I did. So I inherently got some respect from my teammates. I had a really bad experience at school. I was in grade 8. My locker was broken into. Fag was written all over it. I was kind of outed. And I mean, not really outed. Kids didn't even know what that word meant. It was just kind of a bad word to write on someone's locker. But I was very, very cognizant that I can never let that happen at swimming. So something about swimming, as I said, the way I was respected, I was good at it. People wanted to be like me. I saw that, gee, excellence is kind of a deterrent against discrimination. So I just better keep being excellent. And it was probably a major driver for why I wanted to be so successful.
So when did you come out? And I imagine that that answer has a variety of different responses because you would have told different people at different times. But specifically to your swim mates and kind of the swim world, when was that exactly?
I never did. I never told my swimming world until I was retired from swimming. I told a few teammates over the years, mostly women. No one wanted to believe it. Everyone wanted to say, no, are you sure? Like, and so I eventually had a coach, Debbie Muir, a synchronized swimming coach, that started to work with me for some technical expertise that Olympic year, underwater start and turn and breath holding, that kind of stuff. And something about her and our relationship, ultimately, after months of working together, created a space where I felt like I've really got an ally here. And I think leading into the Olympics, I knew that I had to tell somebody and really like reconcile this feeling inside, because how on earth could I drop 7 years, you know, make 7 years improvement, drop 1.2 or 3 seconds and beat the world record holder if I wasn't fully there? I knew I needed all of my energy for that. So Debbie Muir was such a great ally, and that was a big turning point for me. When I came out to her and she completely accepted me, it just, at least I found a place where if ever I felt bad, I could go and talk and share those feelings. And I think it's why I showed up at the Olympics so ready to win. I think it was one of the first times in my career I was 100% fully there.
Have you had any athletes after you came out, or even current athletes today, that kind of reached out and said, hey, because of, you know, what you've done, you've totally changed my career path and what, you know, athletics mean to me?
100%. Yeah, that's really where my advocacy in the LGBTQI2S movement really started, was just by being out. And then suddenly I was a role model for so many closeted athletes. And over the years, dozens, if not hundreds of athletes have reached out to me and shared their story. And I mean, it was pre-Sochi 2014, there still weren't very many out athletes. I came out in 1998 and I was getting so tired of being the go-to person for any of these issues for 16 years. Thankfully, Sochi, in a really perverse way, with the Russian government putting in this propaganda law that targeted our community, it really mobilized a lot of athletes that potentially wouldn't have shared such a private thing, you know, sexuality publicly, but they felt compelled to be visible, representative after that sort of moment in time. So post-Sochi 2014, the landscape has changed enormously.
Anastasia Bussis is a hero on that front from
Absolutely.
Sochi 2014.
Yeah, she was one of the few athletes that came out in 2013 before the
Games. But yeah. Because of the Russian, I'm going to just call it what it is, Mark, BS. Like,
yeah, totally.
You know,
a hate campaign.
Yeah, she did that in response to that campaign. Mark Tewksbury is with us. He is now a companion of the Order of Canada. And this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So a couple of weeks ago, I would say, we had Marnie McBean on, and Katrina Lemay-Doan had just been named the chef de mission for 2022 in Beijing. Marnie was the chef de mission for 2020 Tokyo, which is now Tokyo 2021.
Yeah,
and Ziggy and I got into this silly debate about the pronunciation of chef de mission. So you were chef in 2012.
Yes.
Clarify this for us. Is it chef de mission? Or is it chef de mission, like Ziggy would say?
I couldn't really hear a distinction. But how you're saying
mission
it is, right?
Or mission?
Mission.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I got swept in this season mission. Series.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Here I was thinking I was ahead of the game, and so...
Well, you know it's not a cooking position, so as long as you know that, you're well ahead of the game.
Well, there might have been
confused. You're confused.
There might have been a stupid joke or two about the cooking, because like any normal person, Mark, it always comes back in life to food. What do you remember about being the chef de mission in 2012, and how important was that to you?
Oh, I love that experience. I remember everything about it. I remember when I did the interview to try to get the role. I remember when I got the call that told me I was the chef. I remember going to many of the qualifying Olympic trials and welcoming each team as they, you know, the athletics team or the swimming team or the cyclists as they became part of the Canadian Olympic team. The games were just spectacular. London did a great job. It was one of those typical, you know, Londoners didn't want it. Then the day before the games, everyone realized this is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to our city. The venues were spectacular. Our performances were solid. You know, unfortunately, it's funny. As chef, I actually remember a lot of the fourth, fifth, sixth places of people that might have gotten a medal, but they didn't. And then I was the first one to see them after that performance. And it's a very important moment where somebody's career hinges on this feeling after kind of, you know, not living up to maybe what the dream was, but still being an Olympian and still being really proud of that and helping people bridge that emotional gap at that moment. So I remember all kinds of stuff. It's extremely emotional. When I got home, I felt like I could sleep for a week, because each day at the Olympics, it feels like 3 days, because there's so much going on. And as I said, people's dreams are at stake. And so it's, yeah, really, really high stakes.
What was the biggest difference between 88 and 92 for you, you know, going to Seoul and Barcelona?
That's a good question. I don't think many people have asked that. 88, I was a rookie. I'd never been to Korea, barely been to Asia. Everything felt foreign, including myself. Everything was so enormous, you know, going to an Olympic village for the first time, I just was overwhelmed. And especially the summer, you know, winter's different because there's fewer athletes and there's two villages that kind of split the athlete population in half. So each village just has a couple thousand people. In the summer, it's like 16,000 people, and it's high rises and it's movie theaters and it's bowling alleys and it's a gym and it's a cafeteria that seats 4,000 people. And I just couldn't cope. I was totally distracted. Didn't feel I was on my game. Barcelona was completely different. I went to the city 6 months before. I walked the streets. I felt comfortable. I made sure to familiarize myself with so many things. When the actually Olympics came, I just reveled being in the athletes village with all the athletes. It was just a completely different experience.
With Mark Tewksbury, we had Andre DeGrasse on recently. I'm always interested. Oh,
you guys get all the guests. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, yeah, you know, it's gotten nobody. No, they only find out later that they don't really want to talk to Ziggy and me. But our producer, Silk Gentile, he fools them up until that point. And then the experience.
I'm starting to feel a little left out.
Yeah.
Companion to get on your show.
Well, and trust me, Mark, there was no debate when you got the companion. It had to be the very top. It fascinates me because in a lot of the sports that we cover, right, in the NHL you play 82 games, so a game effectively every second night. Major League Baseball, you're playing 162 games in 185 days. There's always tomorrow to look forward to. And that isn't to say that in between the Olympics over 4 years, there aren't important meets and world championships, et cetera, et cetera. But you'd be honest in saying everything that you do is geared toward the next Olympic Games. From a sports psychology perspective, the help that you got, the way that you prepared, how did you ensure that you were able to maximize yourself at the moment you needed it the most, i.e. the 100-meter backstroke, Barcelona, 1992?
Well, that's the name of the game. I mean, that's the job, and that's everyone around me's job to get me ready for that moment. And, you know, by the time I got to the Olympics, I was on the national team for close to, I think, 8 years. I'd been through this cycle, so you start to figure out how long before your race you need to start to ease back on the heavy training and start what's called the taper phase so that your muscles are ready to spark when it counts. For sure, that sports psychology part was massive. The Olympic year, that was one of the biggest things I worked on, and I sort of uncovered some of the challenges, maybe some of the deep-seated beliefs I was holding that were going to hold me back. You know, it was tough if you've never beaten an American world record holder to believe that you're going to do it in the biggest moment of your life when it counts the most. But actually, I slowly, through really cool exercises, started to train my brain to think that way. And lo and behold, on the day when it counted the most, all of that training locked into place, and I was able to literally drop 1.2 seconds and out-touch Jeff by 6/100ths on the last stroke.
So I started swimming in 2012 because I wanted to get into triathlons.
Here we
and
go.
I couldn't go 25 feet. And I'm watching the swimmers go back and forth, and I end up doing a triathlon a couple years later, but it took me a while. Doing the backstroke, though, how do you go in a straight line? I still can't figure this out.
Well, especially in open water, it's impossible. If you tried to do a triathlon and backstroke, it's like impossible. But even for me, I used to use the roof to guide me, you know, to swim straight. Okay. I'd pick a line on the ceiling. But the Barcelona 100-meter backstroke, it was an outdoor pool. So I actually had to learn how to just change my head position in the water and use the peripheral vision of my eyes to look at the lane rope on either side and just try to use that to gauge my ability to stay straight. So there's a lot of stuff that went into it. It looks very simple, that race in less than a minute, but there's a lot of thinking that went behind it.
Mark, we know that through the years, I mean, you've attended different prides across the country. You've been a very public figure in your advocacy work. What are some of the things that you're up to these days and would like to discuss and promote?
Well, I've got a great company called Great Traits. We do what's called a virtual corporate champions program. It's a 12-week leadership development program that's amazing. It's by Debbie and I. So that relationship that I had with the synchronized swimming coach all those years ago is still as strong as ever, and we've actually distilled our experience into high-performance traits for the corporate world. So that's really fun to deliver. I'm on the board of Special Olympics Canada still, people with intellectual disability whose lives are changed through sport, and I'm also a director of the Canadian Olympic Committee, and it's pretty interesting times there dealing with the pandemic in Tokyo and Beijing ahead.
If you'll permit me on the way out, Mark, just on a personal note, you know, I grew up in Oakville outside of Toronto, and the joke that I tell is that there was no homophobia because, as far as I knew, there was no homosexuality, and I have since come to realize that that is not true. Part of the reason that there was no known homosexuality is because of the covert homophobia. I grew up not knowing any gay people to my knowledge. And so it was people like you who showed me what was possible. And I know the Olympic gold medal means a lot to you, but me and many others around this country, and I know you've encountered many, have benefited from your contributions. So I personally thank you for that.
Thank you. That's very, very kind. Thank you. That was a genuine moment, everybody at home, by the way. That was genuine. This is like not morning show talk. Thank you so much. I know. We just have to continue. Like, you just switched gears there, but thank you so much.
Yeah, I
didn't realize at the time, just, you know, that I remember in 1998 when I decided to come out, and I was so terrified of losing everything and what would happen, but I just couldn't go another day with not being who I was. And I'm so grateful I took that step. There were some tough times, but in the end, it worked out really well.
Yeah, we've all had them if we've gone through it, but you paved the way, and it is greatly appreciated. Congratulations on being a companion, underlined, of the Order of Canada, and we'll certainly look to reach out again.
Thanks. That was really fun. Good morning show.
Good morning show. That cut that, Silent Vic.
Yeah, we need
good
that
morning
one.
Show.
Can we start that every morning?
Good morning show.
Mark was great though. Awesome guy.
Awesome guy.
Yeah.
And he's done so much. So I've got my list of top five wingers on Canadian based NHL teams.
I can't wait. Honestly, I couldn't get to sleep last night just thinking of the names that you would come up with.
See, I worry about you. Couldn't sleep the other night because you got stiffed in the Seahawks-Eagles game. You couldn't sleep last night because you're obsessed with my winger selections.
Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that keeps me up at night.
When do you sleep?
I don't nap.
You wake up at 4 a.m. and you don't nap. Do you sleep?
I haven't taken a nap in years. I've not taken an afternoon nap. But yeah, this is the stuff that keeps me up at night. Your winger list. I can't wait because I'll be on your side when Stewie and Bourne are on, but then after that, I might go to town.
Oh yeah. Well, because you're still frothing over that sim series, the isolation sim series we played where I talked a big game
defeated.
And then it took you until the seventh game of overtime and Hayden Sim to beat me. Mr. Expert.
Can I say?
Mr.
I'm undefeated.
Expert.
Undefeated as a GM in the NHL.
Mr. Expert over here. You know, I used to think that Brett Laurie, remember him, the former Blue Jay? Brett Laurie was the only human being I'd ever met who I couldn't actually envision ever sleeping.
That he used to, didn't he used to like inhale Red Bulls through his nose to start the game?
Oh.
Like some crazy stuff.
He was the baseball version of the Ultimate Warrior. Like the baseball version of the Ultimate Warrior.
But that energy, it's got to be, there's pros and cons to it. Like, you have to like it if you're a manager of a team, right? Because,
yeah.
I mean, playing every day.
Well, Gibby, I'd asked John Gibbons about it. I'd rather
have to tone somebody down than wind somebody up.
Because there were some players on those Brett Laurie era Blue Jays teams that needed winding up. You know, might have been just a little too chill for their own good. But Laurie,
I mean, I like that on a team. I like a guy that can, you know, just, what do I say, ruffle the feathers a little bit?
Ruffle the feathers. Brett Laurie was good at that. Too bad he didn't stay healthy.
You're going to ruffle some feathers after the break, I have a feeling.
Feathers may be ruffled. So Stewie and Bourne tweeted out their top five wingers on NHL, on Canadian-based NHL teams. We responded, and they shot back at us, and we are going to go over our lists and defend our selections on the air when Stewie and Bourne join us for Hockey Central at 8:30 next.
You're listening to Lead Off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack.
What do you think, Ziggy? You think this is another Stewie selection? A final countdown?
I'm not going to put anything out of Stewie's realm of music selections.
I just don't know if this is how we should be starting December with these guys. A little high energy versus, I don't know what would our tag team name be if we were,
what are we going as?
WWE superstars.
I don't know. Give me some ideas.
Did I just hear Stewie's mic was not up? Did he say Bushwhackers? Okay, that's a fireable offense right there. Hey, the slip.
My mic wasn't low. I just murmured it on the bottom of my voice.
The slip, the slip, Stewie, it will be pink when it is delivered to you, pal.
Well, I'll just come back as a guy that just delivers music coming back from the break, because I think I nailed it with this one today, talking about our lists. And that's the one thing I don't like about whenever we come out with a list, everyone says, well, that sucks, that sucks, that sucks. And then I look below that, and they don't have a list of their own. So, Ziggy, I saw your comments yesterday after you woke up from your nap, probably around 1:30 yesterday. But yeah, I didn't see any of your lists. I just saw a couple hmms, but I didn't see any lists.
Well,
the first thing I thought of when I saw Stewie's list is the Nylander spot, because he got absolutely annihilated. What was your comment again about Nylander, Stewie? Refresh my memory.
I said that we were calling for his head probably twice a month, and he handled the pressure and scored 31 goals, listening to idiots like us talk about it every single day.
All right. Okay. So we've got lists, including future Thursday morning guests on this program. And depending on how this goes, you may be off it. But I just want to make it very clear, because Mark Tewksbury said so, that Stewie and Bourne, you better be nice, because we are welcoming you to our...
Good morning show.
Good morning show. We have a good, not great, but good morning show. All right, these lists. Here's the deal. You guys put this out there on social media. The top five wingers on Canadian-based NHL teams. Stewie and then Bourne, start with yours, and we'll rebut and share our lists.
At number one, I had Matthew Tkachuk. I'm not going to get into the explanation. You can check it out, sportsnet.ca. William Nylander at number two. Number three, Kyle Connor. Number four, Patrick Laine. And number five, Mitch Marner.
What?
Wow. William Nylander, number two. He's trying to get the army back on his side. That's all it is. Trust me. Don't buy into it, Scotty. I see Scotty's disgusted.
No,
right
I'm
now.
Disgusted by the Line A selection. He's a goal scorer. Oh. He's not a complete player.
And that's the one thing that I don't like about this new generation of hockey fans and analytics. 40 goal scorers don't grow on trees. Oh, Matthews, you know, he didn't score 50. This Matthews is a 50 goal scorer. So when fans come out and say, well, you know, they're not really goals. 40 goals. Back in the day, back until 1986, those guys, there was only, you know, 6-7 of those guys in the whole entire league. So for guys to say, 40 goal guy, I'm not really sold on him. Shake your head, Ziggy. Come on.
My turn to go through. I had Mitchell Marner at number one. I had Matthew Tkachuk at number two. JT Miller from the Vancouver Canucks at number three. Brady Tkachuk, rounding out the Tkachuk family at four. And then Kyle Connor at number five. I will say that I put a lot of thought into Blake Wheeler being on the list in that spot. That was a bit of a coin toss. And then I think RNH from Edmonton lost out for me, because I wasn't sure. Is he a centerman? Is he a winger? He's kind of both. He was at least near the conversation, but probably would have been around the sixth spot if I considered him a winger.
All right, Ziggy. Since you seem to think that my selections are somehow, some way, the main event of this WrestleMania, I'll hold off. You go ahead.
Okay. At number one, I've got Marner. At number two, Scotty. Who's my number two? Scotty knows who it is for sure.
I don't. Is it? You love JT Miller.
JT Miller.
I didn't want to say it. Okay, obviously.
JT Miller. God,
boys, I just want to say this right now. If I took a shot for every time this guy mentioned JT Miller on this program, I'd I'd be in rehab for life.
Like best pickup for the Canucks.
Now, go ahead. Keep going.
Number three, I got Matthew Tkachuk. Number four, Patrick Laine. And number five, Bill Nylander.
You are just so disgusting.
And then
so
honorable.
That's what I don't like. And sorry to interrupt, but you know they're looking at our list, and it's pretty much the same thing. You interchanged one guy, but you're making it look like I like batteries on my pizza here. The way that's on my list. Like, what is going on here?
It's so true.
You don't like where I put Nylander three spots higher than where you put him? Like, come on.
I know.
Batteries on my pizza.
That's a hilarious line. I will say this, Stewie. I've been at this sports media thing here, like lists and all the rest, for like a decade or so. And man, there is a ton of people who, you know, have a lot of opinions, and that's totally fine. That's what a lot of these lists do. They create the conversation. But you're right. Then you say, okay, what's yours? And it's like, oh, God, what? You know, like, it's rare.
I'm hanging up on Dan Murphy next time he calls. I'll tell you that, because I'm not going through this again. We still got to go. We still got to go D and goalies, man. I'm deleting my Twitter tomorrow.
I have Quinn Hughes ahead of Morgan Riley, and I'm just shuddering thinking about the release of that one.
What, did you just throw that out there as a preemptive strike, just to, so the body blows come now, then you're steeled for it when the actual article appears on sportsnet.ca?
Let's hear yours, Scotty Mack. Let's hear yours.
Let's drum roll it up. Mitchell Marner. Okay.
Ooh, okay.
I got Kyle Connor.
You love
what
Kyle
are you
Connor,
laughing
eh?
At?
You
what
love
I,
him. You
I,
love
I don't,
him.
I don't
you
need,
love Kyle Connor.
I don't need the nasal exhale after my second pick. That is just so passive aggressive. You either love it or you hate it, but the old I'm not going to say anything, but I'm just going to lean into the mic and go That just tells you everything. The little nasal exhale right there. I've got Matthew Tkachuk. And then, you know, I thought I'd be a little creative. I think there's, how about some Blake Wheeler in our lives? Huh? Has he been a pretty good player for a long time or what?
Yay!
Yeah, he's pretty good. I give him an honorable mention for mine. But
and I'm
going
to explain this one because I know somebody's going to jump on me here. Back-to-back 30-goal seasons, and then last year, bit of an injury interruption. He scored 22 goals in 59 games. And kids, with calculators, if you divide 22 into 59, you get 0.37. 0.37 times 82 is 30.5. So he would have scored prorated 30 goals again, making him a three-time consecutive 30-goal scorer. I'm going with Brendan Gallagher of Les Canadiens.
It's a good pick.
That's a good one.
That's a good pick.
Huh?
Look at Goofy. I really wanted that pick to be worse.
Look at what? Look at Goofy. The Goofy face over here on Michael Zigomanis. Why am I getting a what for that?
Oh my
goodness. Who did you think I was going to? Wow. What kind of stupid pick?
I didn't know where you were going to go. I didn't know where you're going to go with that. Not there though. That's the. I knew I was going to be surprised with some of your picks, but that.
Here's what I know: 30 goal scorers don't grow on trees.
I was really hoping you were going to go somewhere deep into the Leafs depth chart for us there. Some sort of Pierre Engvall or something.
You know what silent Vic suggested I do? He, and I'm throwing him right under the bus. He suggested I take Zach Hyman just to play the troll game.
See, you're trying to get a free dinner at Harbor 60. You're trying to get a free dinner at Harbor 60 when it opens up.
And you know what? That's probably the only way you'd get my T-Rex arms, my Scottish ass, into Harbor 60 is to agree to pay for my meal. That would be about the only way. So you don't think I'm that nuts? Did I get an eye roll? I can't see you, Bourne.
It's all good. All four lists came out half decent, but that's what I don't like about social media. They take it to the extreme. Like, they've made it sound like we picked the worst list of all time. So that's the part I don't like about Twitter, but I'm going to own it. I'm going to own this list, and I can't wait till the D and the goaltenders come out, because I had Carey Price high on that list. I'll tell you that.
You know, Stewie's going to be using this list like a shield all season. He's just going to be holding it out in front of him for the Nylander commentary as the, next time he goes to trade him. Hey, look, I had him as the second best winger, but it's coming.
I'm surprised no one had Johnny Gaudreau on their list. He's one of my honorable mentions, and I wanted to throw him in there, but I'm surprised no one.
The issue with that, Ziggy, was we were talking about him because we had Berkey, you know, on our show pretty much every week last year, And for literally about 3 months, we were like, what's going on with Johnny Hockey? What's going on with Johnny Hockey? He had like 3 goals and like six assists after like 30 games. So I think that's what we had, a little bit of a bias because we were talking about it every single day.
I put out some feelers, spoke to some smart people whose opinions I respect. They suggested Johnny Hockey. My comeback was just that. And there's been a couple of seasons where, including last year, Stewie, where we say, what's going on, right? So it's the inconsistency. The other name that should be honorably mentioned but can't be factored in here because most of the time he's a centerman is that Leon Draisaitl is occasionally on the wing with Connor McDavid, but he doesn't do that enough. Like, we think of him as a centerman, not as a winger. So yeah. I just didn't think you could throw him on the list.
What's wild is, like, you know, you look at this division and it speaks to the type of teams there are, because looking at the centermen, my God, loaded with centers. Looking at the wingers, between our lists, I mean, we've got 10 pretty good wingers we've named, you know, and then you go to defense, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. It's like, I remember sitting there last week being like, I don't know, who's the fifth best D in the league? Jeff Petrie? Like, there's going to be a lot of goals in this league. I can't see a whole lot of or in that division, I can't see a whole lot of defense being played.
So not so good for Freddie Anderson's save percentage as he heads into free agency? Is that the...
Might not be ideal, Scott.
Lock him up now. That's another conversation, but I say at least lock him up. Give him another 5 years for the kids. Love Let's it. Go.
Okay, there you go. All right, Anthony Stewart. I mean, geez, that stove was on simmer at 7 a.m. He has not let us down. It's on high here.
I'm pro Anderson too, though. I just I'm questioning bringing... I'm high on him. I think he's the MVP. I'm questioning bringing him back. If you can't,
well, no, but here's the question.
Guys.
Here's a question. Who's better? Who can you get that's better?
Yeah, that can handle the media. That
you're
can
in
handle
the, window.
The media.
You're in the window right now. You can't go about experimenting, right? Like this is Marner's, Matthews, Nylander's, Tavares's time here in Toronto. What do you guys make of our buddy Gary Bettman's statements yesterday? We talked about this off the top. I mean, we're getting a season here. It just feels like we're in escalator mode from 2013, where the shots are starting to be fired, but ultimately it's going to culminate in something good. They would just, you know, we're in that phase where we need to be scared a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're in that mode where, you know, Gary is trying to protect. You know, he's trying to take back a little bit of money from the players in the big picture, but at the same time, he's trying to win the PR battle in doing it. And saying this isn't a renegotiation is an interesting way to try to position it when you're trying to say, okay, well, let's raise escrow on the guys 3 years from now or however many years from now. Clearly, it is a renegotiation. You know, he said some of the assumptions they made when they made the deal 5 months ago are not applicable anymore. Well, why not? Everything we read, you know, they were presented with scenarios, best case, worst case, medium, all the above, and they still made the deal. So it is a renegotiation. I do think we're going to have a season two, but I just see Bettman trying to position themselves in the negotiation while also trying to win the PR battle, and it's not working on either front as of right now.
Well, I think he should run for politics because he almost made me a believer until I realized he looked like one of those car salesmen in the movies that has the hood up and say, oh, it's an amazing car, don't worry about it. Then he shuts the hood, then all four tires fall off. So yeah. he almost had me. He almost had me until he closed the hood. And just his explanation saying it wasn't a renegotiation, where it pretty much is. So the one positive is that both sides want to come back and play. And I heard Elliot Friedman saying there's 12 owners, you know, content without playing a season next year. That's a lie. This is a big money, and when you have that much money on the table available, you got to find a way to get it done. So I think both sides agree with that. They'll find a way to get it done sooner than later.
What are you guys thinking? What's your guess for start date?
I have Saturday, January 16th, if you want me to be specific, 7 p.m.
Oh, wow.
I looked at the calendar yesterday to figure this out. And, you know, they're talking about trying to do, you know, in the past when they've come back, it's been like Jan 19th, Jan 20th. You know, they want to get in as many games as possible. I can, you know, Berkey said on our show yesterday that the players have dug it on Christmas. They want to be home for Christmas. So, all right, we come out of Christmas. The guys are back in camps in early January. Let's get rolling by kind of the middle of the month there. Hopefully we're only... You know, we're that close to getting action back.
Yeah, I'll go the same, around that date.
All right, guys, I'm going to leave it up to Silent Vic because he is the great defender of our program, but I also know he tries to ingratiate himself to you. Silent Vic, should these two, Stewie and Bourne, be invited back next Thursday?
Yay!
Oh, okay. Well, tiebreak.
Wow, we passed the test.
Tiebreak goes to Silent Vic. We'll have you back on. This was fun, boys. I will tweet out my list. And we'll.
I'm not tweeting mine out.
Of course, you're
I don't
not.
Need a. I don't need a war. I can't go to sleep if I tweet this list out.
I just want
Mine's
you two
still
to know.
Going. Mine's still going. Someone asked me what I was smoking at like 5:30 in the morning.
Well, what's the answer? And can I have some? No, I
Starbucks.
I just want you guys to know, in case you're worried about your buddy Ziggy over here, he wasn't able to sleep Monday night into Tuesday because he felt he got shafted when the Eagles pulled the backdoor cover on the Seahawks, and he wasn't able to sleep last night into today because he was worried about my five-player list. So
you should start calling it the Ziggy lockouts because none of those locks are getting locked in, I'll tell you that.
See you, boys. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Anthony Max. Stewart, Justin Bourne, Hockey Central at 8:30, which we do every Thursday here on the program. We'll tee you up for tomorrow morning's show, get Hugh into studio, and recap the day's top news next.
This is Lead Off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
On the off-board, 72 years old today.
72 years young.
Ozzy.
He had some good hits, huh?
Oh, this is going back to high school for me, buddy.
Think he knows he's 72? Is that an inappropriate question to ask?
Depends what day it is.
Hey, dude lived.
Yeah, did he ever?
I am not here to dispute the fact that the dude had some good times.
Watch the Motley Crue movie. The guy playing Ozzy. Well, if those stories are even close to being true. Oof. Wow.
That Osborne's reality show, what was it? What was it called? That was a thing.
That was awesome. I used to watch that, though.
Holy
it was
crap.
Strange because you With saw him in
Sharon?
Such a different light. He was just this kind of doting father. Yeah. He wasn't this, like,
amazingly, the
God.
Name of the show was The Osbournes.
That's crazy enough.
Sharon,
it just might work.
Sharon kept it together. Like, did Sharon never. Kept that whole yes. operation together. I don't think Ozzy was. I don't think Ozzy was sitting down behind that desk and doing his
no,
own taxes.
He was like, not the boss of that household.
No, and probably a good thing. The day's top news: the Lakers are, well, they're intact, and the Clippers are a mess. And Steve Ballmer's got some things to figure out. But the brow, Anthony Davis is close to putting pen on paper to a five-year, $190 million max deal to stay with LeBron James, who signed a two-year, $85 million extension yesterday. Hugh Burrell is out with the take. At least two more championships
yep.
for the Braun Brow.
Prove me wrong,
Lakes.
Kids. Prove me wrong.
They might. Huh? But we won't know that for a while.
That's true.
That's true. The thing. How are you? Are you good with my list? Like, what's the deal here? Like, I feel like you're disappointed that you can't mock me harder.
What's wrong
with my list?
Go through
it's
your list
all right.
again. Go through your list again real
He's
quick.
He's got Marner,
Connor.
Cal Connor, Matthew Tkachuk, Blake Wheeler, and Gallagher from...
Gallagher's a three-time 30-goal
yep.
scorer if you prorate
really like
this
pick.
Season.
I don't know. For top five, I mean, I mean, you know who we didn't even discuss is Brock Besser in Vancouver.
That's a good point.
I mean, if you're going to bring up Gallagher, why can't I bring up Besser?
What was your list again, Zig? Who was your five?
I had Marner, JT Miller at two, and then Tkachuk, Laine, and Nylander in number five.
That's an interesting conversation.
Not bad.
Gallagher is a multiple-time 30-goal scorer. Nylander is a one-time 30-goal scorer, and we could have the two-way debate. Mm. We could have the two-way debate.
Who's the more rounded
Maybe.
Player? Who would you rather have in the playoffs?
You know?
Sorry to interrupt, guys. I just had a text message from a buddy who said you spelled Kyle Connor wrong.
Who did?
In your list.
Connor is C-O-N-N-E-R.
I think it's O-R, isn't it?
Let's,
I don't know. I just got a message.
Let's check that. Let's check that.
Those are two totally different people. Connor and Connor.
Yeah. Who are we talking about?
It's an O? Oh, Jesus.
Is it really
apparently
an O?
It is. Apparently it is.
You're the worst.
That's what wow. I'm talking about? I had a buddy that messaged me that quick when you. I'm not putting it up.
You know what? I'm keeping that up there.
Yeah, keep it up.
I'm keeping that up there. Good day to my friends on the prairies. We'll have the Gallagher Nylander debate maybe Friday. Enjoy your Thursday.
Good morning, show.
More than.